I am here with Senator Roy Blunt at Missouri State University's Farm Bureau Ag Forum, and we just got done talking about lots of hot topics, not only affecting Missouri farmers, but the nation as a whole. One thing we talked a lot about today was water and water rights. We have the water rights of the U.S., and then we have the Water Resources Development Act. Kind of hit on those and how that directly affects agriculture across the country.
Well, it has a big impact on agriculture. It has a big impact on our economy. We need to be sure that the regulators, the federal regulators in all these areas, aren't allowed to just continue to go down the road of regulation that doesn't make sense, that doesn't really meet any straight face test on a cost-benefit analysis. All of us want clean water. All of us want clean air. All of us involved in agriculture love the land and what comes off the land and how in the beauty of the land. But you have to have some common sense in terms of how you apply these rules and regulations. And I think that's in the proposed a Water Act that essentially takes the federal ability to regulate navigable waters and eliminate the word navigable. So you basically water becomes a federal domain. That has never been the case in the country. It shouldn't be the case in the country. And it has big economic impact if we let it be the case in the country.
Kind of hit on trade negotiations. We have the TTP or the TPP and the TTIP. And what are the chances of that actually being accomplished in the near future?
Well, I think the administration's made a big mistake by not getting the authority that every president since Franklin Roosevelt has asked for, and to have trade promotion authority, which means instead of treating a trade deal like a treaty that two-thirds of the Senate has to approve and can amend, you treat it under trade promotional authority where the House and Senate both have to approve it, but it's either yes or no. Nobody wants to negotiate a treaty that can then be amended by some other body. And if we don't want to have trade agreements, the way to not have trade agreements is to assume that somebody's going to do things that nobody in the world is willing to do. Trade's to our advantage in almost every case, certainly in agriculture. We have very few barriers on agriculture coming into the country. Other countries having to lower their barriers for ag products of all kinds to come into their countries is important, and we shouldn't allow our negotiators to give up beef or pork or grain crops or anything else as part of that negotiation because we have great opportunity in these areas to sell our products.
Well, in our panel discussion, I kind of asked you to hit on immigration reform and how it affects Missouri. But what do you kind of see being done with that, with Congress? You mentioned three specific things that you think need to be accomplished, or the three problems that need to be accomplished.
Right. Well, you know, I think the best way to solve this problem, and I've thought this for at least a decade now, is to solve each of the problems individually. How do you secure the border? What are the legitimate workforce needs of the country? And what do you do with people who came or stayed illegally? I think the last two, as difficult as they are, become pretty easy to solve if people believe that you really have the first thing under control, either at the workplace or the border itself or both, ideally, so that you don't have people coming into the country illegally or able to stay here illegally because they've got jobs that they're not legally here and shouldn't be allowed to have. But the government has to secure the border, and I think when that happens, then you can have a discussion about what are the highly technical people we need, what are the skilled part-time people that we need that would come and go and not be part of a full-time economy, and I think that all starts with securing the border first.
Kind of on the same, well, definitely on the same topic of border security, but the migrant farmer and how we pay them and how we regulate that once they are here. Any comments on that?
The big question there traditionally has been whether these workers were allowed to come and go. And there are certain work and labor rules that are going to apply to them, some in specific state situations, some federal rules. But if you have people coming, working for a short period of time, taking the money they make that they couldn't have made in their own country and going back, they're not going to come back again a second year unless they felt like they were treated fairly. And this is not a one-time, one season, we'll never see or need these workers again. And so I think this system, to a great extent, is self-regulating in terms of whether you want these workers to come back. Workers that can come and go are much less captive of the work system than workers who are here illegally, and they know it, and the person they're doing work for knows it. Those are the easiest people to take advantage of.
On a new topic, Missourians know that the right to farm is important. We as agriculturalists and have been born and bred in the world of agriculture understand that. What does this mean to the nation? Because it's going to be culminating throughout other states in the future.
Well, you know, agriculture and farming and the world food opportunities are going to be so great for us that I think people are going to begin to understand again what an important part of our economy agriculture is, always has been, and will be even more important over the coming decades because of our ability to play such a large role in helping meet food needs in the world. At the same time, so many people now are multi-generations removed from anybody who ever lived on the farm, worked on the farm. That means American farm families need to work a little harder than they used to work to be sure that they're helping explain what they do and how they do it. And people who want a strong economy need to work harder to be sure and explain exactly where this food comes from, how we have this abundant supply of food that's so much smaller a part of family budgets than it's ever been before in the history of the world. That doesn't just happen, but a lot of Americans have gotten in a position where they think it somehow just happens.
Renewable fuel standards and how the EPA is proposed to lower the volume requirements for biofuels, and you guys hit on a pipeline coming through and energy is a big hole. But what do you think is your opinion on the renewable fuel synergy and kind of sum up the energy topics we discussed earlier tonight?
Well, I think whatever we do in to produce more American energy is a good thing. I do think that all the energy we produce needs to be able to be competitive in the economy on its own in a relatively short period of time. What you do to help that get there is important, and the government shouldn't be constantly changing the rules. It's pretty hard to go to the banker and borrow the money you need these days, particularly if you say, well, I think this program's going to be extended, or I think they're going to do what the law says. We ought to be thoughtful about how we write these laws, and we ought to be even more thoughtful before we decide that it's time to change them.
As we go into, we're well into 2014, but as we go into the next year, 2015, and even on to the next 5 years, what do you see some issues that we're going to continue to face when it comes to agriculture across the United States?
Well, I think the big issues are how we deal with the opportunities in agriculture. Does our infrastructure continue to keep pace with our ability to not only feed ourselves, but be part of a very competitive, world market, food market in need of American products? How do we connect those products with those buyers? And all the things that happen the people that are involved in maintaining the docks and building roads and running the railroad. And agriculture goes so far beyond the farm family and the farm family's field or barns or facilities. And how do we take full advantage of that? I think we see the potential for American agriculture and how we use data, how we use advanced science, how we take advantage of the new Panama Canal, what we do with biomass as Europe moves toward 20% of all their utilities need to be biomass-based by 2020. That's 7 years from now. And a lot of that biomass can come as byproducts of American agriculture. How do we get the most out of this great opportunity of a world that wants more and better food and an American infrastructure that can help produce an awful lot of that?
Follow up on the food thing real fast. You mentioned Africa earlier tonight and how that huge continent plays into feeding the 9 billion people by 2050.
You know, half the people in the world are going to live in Africa in 2050. And Africa in many ways is the missing continent in what the world's doing right now to feed itself. You know, the United States, Brazil, Canada, Australia, and a handful of other smaller countries aren't going to be able to feed the entire world. So what we're going to have all we can do we need to begin to understand that there's going to be a market out there, that if we're growing the right thing, somebody's going to buy it. So this is no longer about, will anybody buy our products? It's, can we get our products to the people that want to buy them? And on top of that, what do you do to use American technology and American industry and American agriculture to make the advances that people, particularly on the continent of Africa, need to grow a lot of their own food so that can afford to buy a lot of our food?
Well, thank you, Senator Blunt. Once again, talking with Senator Blunt here at the Missouri State University's Ag Forum, I'm Jamie Johansson.